My next guest is one of the Food Network heroes, Iron Chef. I hate to use the word celebrity chef, but she deserves it. She's worked everywhere. She's done Daniel Boulud and Patina, her own restaurant, Butter and the Darby, and knows everything there is to know. But right now, I guess the playbook is really being thrown out the window in the restaurant business. I'm doing this show right now from New York, where over 1,300 restaurants have closed permanently and will never reopen. That's scary. And many of them were my favorites. And we're not just talking the five-star fine dining restaurants. We're talking local neighborhood joints where they preserve the sense of community and friendship and longevity. It's hitting everybody. And who better to talk about it than Alex Garnaschelli? Hello, Alex.
How are you?
Well, I'm hanging in. Are you hanging in?
I mean, I've had a restaurant in Manhattan for 19 years, and it's closed for now.
And so you're not alone in this, and it's a tough situation to be in. And now we have a situation where the governor has just announced that starting September 30th, people can do indoor dining as long as the restaurants cap the capacity at 25%. I don't really know if that really helps you, does it?
No. And, you know, it's really a hard issue because I've had a restaurant for a long time. I want everybody to go back to work. I want my employees to be working. But on the other hand, you have the public health issue and what kind of risk it creates if everybody does go back to work. And so it just creates to me a lose-lose in a way, you know? We don't all get back to work. Or we do, and not everybody is safe. And I think that's really kind of what it comes from. I know a lot of people that are struggling, that have multiple restaurants in Manhattan, and all of them are closed. I just got an email for a GoFundMe for the revered cookbook store, Kitchen Arts and Letters, that is unable to pay its rent. And they're selling cookbooks. They're not even a restaurant. So, I mean, even just people asking me, well, what about the air conditioning? What about recirculated air? Can we sit inside safely? I mean, there are so many unanswered questions.
Everybody's looking for answers, and they're not easily found.
Well, I think it's more that there are multiple sort of answers depending on your approach, which just doesn't work when you're dealing with people's livelihood.
Exactly.
I think we need the government to help us. And are they going to?
Well, you know, we had that emergency PPP. We had the PPP money, but that ran out. And, you know, even though that may have been well-intentioned, all that did was allow businesses that didn't have a lot of business to stay in business until the money ran out. And then they went out of business, or they closed, or they furloughed people. And this just isn't restaurants. It's across the board. And we're seeing that now with the airlines. We're seeing it now with hotels. The hotel owners who can't afford to make their debt service just on the buildings alone, doesn't matter what the brand is that's hanging on the outside of the building, whether it's Marriott or Hilton or Hyatt. If the owner of the building can't make debt service, the hotel doesn't open. So it's crazy, right?
I mean, it's pretty unfathomable. I grew up in Manhattan, so, you know, when I read an article about a place like Delmonico's or somewhere I've gone my whole life, you know, it's just sort of inconceivable. New restaurants that I was just starting to frequent when this all started, you know, really old ones, really new ones. I do see a lot of signs of life in Manhattan. I'll give it that. What concerns me is there's no tree at Rockefeller Center this Christmas, and there's no Broadway. So
yep.
Those are big attractions that naturally attach themselves to dining out, not to mention what it does to another huge industry, which is Broadway. So it's just had an unbelievable domino effect on everything. I think we need support, you know? I think we need support from the federal government to get restaurants back on their feet.
And do you feel that's going to happen? Do you think it's going to happen?
I don't know. I don't know. Do you?
Well, at a certain point, you reach a point of diminishing returns where it basically starts to spiral so quickly that even with a lot of money, you can't stop the inevitable. You got to get it right early. And I'm not so sure they did. And, you know, we're coming into a situation now where we have weather in many cities in the United States. We're in the fall and winter. You can't do outside dining. I mean, you can do it in California, but you can't do it in New York. And, you know, the statistics and the science tell us that when they did tracing, a majority of the people who said they got COVID at a restaurant were those who were eating indoors, not just in New York, but all over the country. And so you're right. It's not a win-win situation for anybody to open up at 25% because you have the public health issue, too.
It's kind of hard for me to. It pits two things against each other, and neither one of them is anything I care to think about. One is all the employees that have worked with me at Butter for 20 years not working, which is just heartbreaking to me. And the second is more COVID cases and more public health issues on the other side. So
exactly.
It's really...
I can tell you this, Alex. I'm a born and raised New Yorker. I'm talking to you right now from New York because normally I'd be in Los Angeles or on the road, but I'm in my New York bunker, right? And the only upside for me, which you might laugh about, is the only bill I haven't had to pay in 6 months is dry cleaning. Right?
Funny.
That's about it. Right?
And well, I worry about dry cleaners, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Who is dry cleaning their clothes?
You got me.
But also taxis.
Yeah, the taxis are hurting. They're hurting big time.
Yeah.
And those guys are working on the margins to begin with. Absolutely.
Right. And I mean, those medallions, all the money they paid for those taxi medallions.
Right, which are now not worth very much at all. Do you see a solution if the feds don't come in and help?
No, not really.
Wow.
I mean, I think you're right. I think we either need to open up or get some support. Because I think flailing around like this is not the answer.
Well, let's turn the page a little bit. With everybody staying at home and everybody eating at home, why don't you humor me? What's in your fridge right now?
I mean, you can't ask a chef what's in their fridge because, you know, it's always full with weird stuff. my daughter, Ava, does a lot of pickling. She's 13 and she doesn't want to be a chef, but she loves cooking and she loves eating. And she pickles a lot of vegetables. So
okay.
We have pickled carrots, pickled fennel. She put some shallots in an olive brine. She's doing a lot of really unusual stuff. So I have lots of jars of pickled stuff. I'm ready for winter. and I also have an obscene amount of mustard. Because I love mustard, I always have at least, honestly, about a quart of mustard on hand.
You just never know
when you're going to need a giant scoop of mustard.
I have to tell you, I come back from all of my trips when I was traveling with at least two things from every country, honey and mustard. And in the last couple of years, salt.
Agree.
Yeah. And, I love it. I can't get enough of it. But you know what? Supplies are dwindling. Oh, and the other thing I'll come back with, if I can really find great stuff, is olive oil. But
really?
difficult to transport. Obviously, you can't carry it on. But here's my other question for you. And when we come back, I want you to think about this because in what way? We understand how we've all had to pivot, how we've all had to adjust to this brave new world, and our eating habits have changed. Obviously, we're not dining out a lot. But for people staying at home who are cooking at home, has it changed literally their food choices? Because one of the things I noticed, and we'll talk about this on the flip side, is the amount of snacking going on. If you talk to the guys who do Oreos or the Nabisco Company or the Doritos folks, their sales are through the roof. Ding dongs. I mean, you can't believe it. We'll talk to Alex Guarnaschelli about that when we return, right after this. It's 33 minutes after the hour. Peter Greenberg here with you as Eye on Travel continues with Alex Guarnaschelli, who's Iron Chef, Food Network celebrity chef, restaurant owner, and legendary person on this show. When we last left off, I was talking about America's eating habits at home these days. I mean, there doesn't seem to be any middle ground. They're either mainlining Oreos or they're eating healthier than they've ever eaten before. I don't see a middle ground. Do you?
I do. I think people are... I think it's true that people are either eating ready-made foods that are a massive comfort that they've known forever. They're double downing on the Americana. That I give you. But I think people are also getting a little nutty with the, sourdough project and all the other stuff that they might not normally have done, right? Because they have more time on their hands.
Yeah, we're all bakers now, right?
Yeah, I think baking has obviously really exploded. I think the baking powder lobby and, other people are really happy. But I do see a lot of people cooking more in general. And people are saying to me, hey, you know what? I kind of came up with some dishes I really like. And other people saying to me, I'm so sick of making dinner that when I can go back and eat out, I'm never eating at home again for the rest of my life. So I get a lot of dramatic hyperbole, you know? Like, I'm never eating home again, you know? But I do think people are expanding their repertoire. And I do think people have really gotten a lot more into cooking. But I also agree, you're right, it's true. I think we're really into comfort food. I think food has become more recreation for us than it even was before. I mean, you can't go out, but at least you can make a good dinner. At least you can give the illusion of having transported yourself somewhere. Sometimes a recipe from another part of the world will spark a memory of a trip or travel, or you replicate that dish you had 5 years ago in Greece on your vacation. So I do think there's a sort of call for cooking and food to transport you and to recreate feelings of maybe times when you were out and about in the world, you know? Yeah. So I think food has the power to do that. And you, how passionate you are about travel, you know how transporting food can be.
Absolutely.
So this is our opportunity to, you know, go beachside with a clam bake or, you know, whatever else, you can create those feelings.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. When it comes to me, I'm a huge fan of sutlach. You know what that is?
No.
That's Turkish for rice pudding.
It's so funny and, you should say that.
Tell me,
I love
what's
that
funny?
You brought
tell
up
me.
Rice pudding. I was in a very old school diner today through a haphazard series of circumstances, and I was talking with the owner, and he was telling me how he's struggling and how he's pivoting and doing so many things to make ends meet. And I said, to me, the true marker of a great diner is the rice pudding. It has to have that sheet of cinnamon over it and be in that rectangular container in the display next to the fruit salad behind the counter. And he turned around, and there was a bowl of fruit salad and a bowl of rice pudding. And he scooped me a little scoop of rice pudding, and I bit into it, and I cried. Because it just took me straight back. I'm here, tears streaming down my face. But please, I digress somewhat. What about your Turkish rice pudding?
Well, the Turkish rice pudding, it's very difficult to find, but you can find it at some Turkish restaurants here in New York. And that's my, give me a grilled cheese sandwich and a rice pudding, and I'm good for a week.
Oh, wow. Those are the comforts, I think. So, I think people have upped their technique game and upped their cooking, but I think that what we want is simplicity and comfort. We want food to make us feel better about our day and the state of the world.
You know,
and I'm
sorry, I think you're right.
Restaurants don't
think you're right. In fact,
to do that.
You're right. in lieu of or in the absence of a security blanket for the virus, we definitely want a security blanket with our food. And that's a short-term replacement, but it does do the trick in the short term.
I mean, I think it can provide some hope, a feeling of community. I mean, I don't want to get too hokey, but I do think food is a very powerful thing. I think it's a way of sharing different cultures. I mean, my mother's lifelong passion is really culture, and certainly culture, one big expression of that is often through food and ingredients. So, you know, that's why we need restaurants.
Well, we need restaurants for two other reasons, too. It's more than just the food. You mentioned it. It's not just community, but it's another C word, conversation. It brings people together. It's common ground. It's amazing what you can discover over a meal. And, you know, countries have made peace over meals. That's the way it's supposed to be. My hope is you get to reopen soon, not at 25%, but the way it used to be, and that so many of your colleagues can get back to work, so many of your employees can get back to work. And I hope that we're going to find widespread, rapid response and accurate testing where you can get responses in 20 to 30 seconds, whether you're negative or positive, at every touch point of your trip, which will allow you to go back to Alex's restaurant and to your favorite restaurant and my favorite restaurant. Alex Granicelli from Iron Chef, the Food Network celebrity chef and the owner of the Darby right here in New York. Alex, thanks as always for being with us, and here's to better days ahead.